This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's January 31st, 2018. Wow, we cooked through the first month already. That means we are just yet another month closer to nice weather. Yay, nice weather. It's coming. We're freezing right now, but we'll have nice weather soon. Welcome to Bicycle Talk, this week with my co-host, Fran Storch.
Yo.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or would like to contribute information to the show, please call or text at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also visit Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you'd like to contribute to the show or be a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. So Ron's rant of the week is going to start us off, and my rant of the week is the city of Plainville, Connecticut. What's with Plainville, Connecticut? Why should that be a rant?
I couldn't tell you.
Well, I'll tell you why. This is an interesting thing. This has been a battle that's been going on for a very long time in Plainville. There's this wonderful, wonderful trail, the Farmington Valley Heritage Rail Trail, I think is what it's called. And it's an unbelievable trail that's paved, and it goes up into Massachusetts, and it starts all the way down in New Haven, and it basically spans the entire state of Connecticut from south to north. So anyway, there has been a gap in the trail for a while, and I mean, I'm talking 20 years, 30 years, and they've been finished on both sides, and every other town seems to be doing their job, and they're creating more of this trail. But the city of Plainville has some problems, because one of the issues I know, because I have talked to people who are involved with it out there, is that the trail, as it stands right now, goes through a section of Plainville, which is an industrial section of Plainville, and there's still a live rail there. So this would have to put this trail next to definitely next to a live rail, which becomes a safety concern. So anyway, but the biggest problem is the biggest problem is people, for some reason, have this problem with trails going through their neighborhood. So the reason I'm bringing this all up on my rant of the week is because on the 5th of February, between 6 and 8 p.m., the middle school in Plainfield will have a public hearing to talk about this rail trail going through their town.
Plainville?
Plainville. Yes, Plainville, Connecticut. It's over near New Britain and Farmington and down in that area there. So they're going to have a public hearing, and it's going to go for 2 hours. And since the study came up at a town meeting, the naysayers objected at every meeting. Between 5 and 10 naysayers have commented, not in my backyard, not on my street, not in my park, not in my town. There have been over 100 objections that have been made to the town council. So now it's time for you to get out there and say, hey, wait a second. I've got this trail. It goes through my town, and it's great. It does really wonderful things. Or say that maybe you felt the same way. Maybe you were going to have this come through your quote-unquote backyard, and you were concerned about the type of traffic that was going to be on the trail, and then you found out that, you know, it's not like everybody says it is. These are all common objections to any kind of a bicycle trail that goes through. I have heard them for decades, and it's unfortunate because it usually has something to do with, it's an ignorance issue. If once you educate people and you inform them and you show them the results, and it changes. It changes everything. So let's all go in force. If you are free that night, that will be February 5th, between 6 and 8 p.m. at the middle school of Plainville. Why don't you go out there and just even if you don't want to say anything, even if you just show up as a supporter of the trail and you're just there in numbers, it will make a big difference. You have to keep your, you really have to, you know, keep their minds open on this. You can also go to a Facebook page they have, which is called the Farmington Valley Trails Council, and you can look at that. There are a number of different things here. There was a an article in the Hartford Current last year that talked about the gap in Plainville. This is a big deal, and it has to do, I think, primarily with a business owner who has a very large business that utilizes the rail trail, the actual rails, excuse me. So they have some concerns about it. Those concerns can be very easily addressed. Fencing can be put up. There are solutions to this. This really isn't a problem at all. So I put on the Facebook, the Bicycle Talk Facebook page earlier today, I put, do you use bicycle rail trails and how have they benefited to you and your community? So I got a couple of responses back already. Sarah from Massachusetts, she says, absolutely. They're great for taking an easy ride, showing new riders safe places to ride, and for connecting to other areas where you might not want to ride a particular section of road. They are wonderful. And David says, yes, we do. The benefit is it has my fiance, best friend, now my biking partner, into cycling. So there you go. It got somebody into cycling. So these trails are great. They're wonderful. It's really, it's a very, very positive experience. And we need to kind of educate the people in Plainville. Let's show up to the meeting. Check it out. See what you think. So there are a lot of good things on other notes here. We on the positive side, we'll move on to that. And it talks all about, if we look at it at the positive sides here, you're going to see, let's see here, benefits of trails. And that's not what I was looking for. I was looking for other things. The positive side is that these trails are doing really, really good things for our societies. And if you take a look, there are a number of different articles that are online, blog posts that are online, and people talking about what has happened with their neighborhoods and their businesses and how bicycling really, it can save your economy. It really can. Because these trails, they'll get people out. They're going to get people using. There's health reasons that you want to have them there. There's transportation and livability, conservation, environment issues, all these things. And then economy revitalization. The economic effects of trails and greenways are sometimes readily apparent, as in the case of trailside businesses, and are sometimes more subtle, like when a company decides to move to a particular community because of the amenities like trails. So if you're a business and you are looking to make a move and you want to get a more fit, athletic, healthy type of clientele working for you and with you, having a trail next to you is a great thing. I know that I talked to, there's a Steve on the other side of the river who owns a number of car dealerships over there. He was concerned when the Farmington Valley Trail was going through at first, because, you know, we all worry about it, but he's a bike guy, so he kind of let it happen. I had this great conversation with him a couple of years ago, and he said that the trail goes right by the back of one of his car lots. And he does have fencing for his car lot, but he said it's great because it brings people to his business, because they're riding their bikes by, they look over, they see a car they might be interested in, they go back and they'll look at it. So he looks at it as the best advertising he's ever had. So if you look at it from a different perspective, you open your minds, it's a good thing. So this is the positive side. There's also historic preservation and community identity. You taking some of these trails, these old rail trails that have been there for for, you know, decades, well, not decades, really centuries, and you're keeping them alive. So you're keeping that all that hard work that was done maybe even 100 years ago or more gets to be reused in a very, very positive way. So this is all the good reasons why you want to have the trails. I'm kind of locking in on this idea here, but I really wanted to focus on the positive things that the trails bring to you. So there was one other one here. So the naysayers are out there, and the naysayers are, well, it's tough. They just need to learn a little bit more about it. If you've never been on one of these, you definitely need to do it. So on the positive side, the minute that weather gets a little bit warmer, starts feeling a little bit nicer out there, maybe you should go take a journey and bring your bike out to a rail trail and go for a ride. And this time of year, up here in the Northeast, we have both paved trails and non-paved trails. The non-paved trails are a little soft this time of year, so it's kind of like I would probably try to find my way towards more of a paved trail. Or icy, too. Yeah, they can still be icy. Actually, they're definitely icy with the weather we're having right now. We just got a little bit more snow the last couple of days, so and then it melts, and then it freezes, and so they can be a little dangerous. But the paved ones are pretty good, and the Farmington Valley Trail is a great example of that. That Farmington Valley Trail, by the way, big shout-out to that. It's very, very popular, almost to the point of a little too much population on it, but that's okay. At least people are out riding their bikes. But it goes right now. You can pretty much take, there's a couple of gaps in it that I know of, but you can start in Belchertown, Massachusetts, and you can take that trail over to Amherst, and then that trail over to Northampton, from Northampton down to Southampton. And then there is a small gap between Southampton and Westfield, but it is being worked on right now. And then once you get to Westfield, Massachusetts, you can take it all the way down until you get to good old Plainville. So there is a gap in Plainville. It's not that large, but it is a gap, and it's unfortunate. Hopefully it'll be resolved here very soon. And then you can continue south on it. There is one other gap. I believe it's in Cheshire, if I'm not mistaken. There's a small gap there, but then it goes all the way to New Haven. And so you could go right down to the shore with it. So it's just great. It's just such a great thing. So if you get a chance, get out and check it out. Speaking of the weather turning and getting nice, so the maintenance minute this week. So maybe you got a chance to get out and ride your bike last weekend with all the nice weather. I know that there are others that have, because I'm sitting here with one of them right now, and she was able to get out and ride her bike. That's you. Yes, it is you. It's absolutely you. So the first thing that happens is Fran says to me, she says, "Hey, Ron, can you kind of check my bike over and make sure it's working okay?" And of course, you know, I put it up on the stand and it was working okay, but then it wasn't really.
No.
So you know, what happens is, you know, if the bike sits for a long time over the wintertime, the cables get a little stiff. There's some things that go
really
on.
Really stiff.
So when you first get out and ride your bike, you may find that things weren't exactly the way you wanted it to be. So if you're the type that goes by the rule of when in doubt, hire out, go see your local bike shop. They're very happy to see you. They love to see you this time of year. They'll check your bike over. They'll make sure everything's working right. They might recommend a few things. And I'm going to go through a short list here. There's 7 steps for spring tune-up. First of all, clean your bike. Clean it. Use a biodegradable cleaner of some sort, maybe like a Simple Green or something like that, and clean your bike down. Make an effort to use as little water as possible. I think I had mentioned on a previous maintenance minute not to use pressurized water, please, because it gets into the bearings. It's really a bad idea, so you don't want to use that. So clean your bike off. Start with that. What we used to do at the bike shop is we would just strip the bike right down. We'd take the wheels off, and we'd just get right down to the frame as close as we could, and then at that point we would start from there and work forward. But anyway, you want to clean your bike. You want to inspect your brake system. Make sure that's all working. Make sure your brakes, when you squeeze on them, they actually work. Check your brake pads. Check your cables. Make sure there aren't any frays in your cables or anything like that. And, you know, replace the pads if necessary, that sort of thing. So, and the pads, they might get a little glazed over if they've been used for a long time, too. And they can harden. So you can always put a fresh set of pads on. That's nice. And you want to take a look at your wheels and make sure that they're straight and make sure that they're also not just straight back and forth, but that they're not, I like to call it lumpy. So that you want to make sure that they're true up and down, too. And if you don't, then damaged rims can cause uneven wear to tires and brake pads, which can shorten their lifespan. So you might want to check your wheels out real carefully, too. Number four on the list here is inspect your drivetrain. Drivetrain is very important. That's your chain, your cassette. That's your derailleurs and your crankset on the bike. You want to check and make sure there isn't a lot of wear on the cogs. Maybe you were having some problems last fall when you were last on your bike and you found that your bike was kind of skipping a bit and doing that. You want to check and make sure that chain is still fresh and not worn out. Maybe you want to replace the chain. Maybe you want to replace the cassette and then start fresh. It's always a nice way to start the next year. So, and while you're at it, you want to check your tires. Make sure they're still in good shape. If you just put them on last fall, they're probably just fine. But if you rode an entire season on them, you might want to just check and make sure they're okay. And even if they are new, you want to still take a look and make sure there aren't any nicks in the sidewalls or cuts in the tires should you have ridden it on the road and you might have picked up a piece of glass or something. So you want to check those out too. Checking your cables. The cables... in the winter, if you're getting back into the spring and you can swing it and you you have a couple extra bucks to spend on some cables, buy some new cables. It's definitely worth it. That's what I'm going to do to Fran's bike. I'm going to pull all the cables out. I'm going to put in new cables, new housings. We're going to completely redo the bike, and so it starts out completely fresh.
Were those cables old?
Well, I replaced an inner cable on... I think I replaced both inner cables, but the thing is, I did not replace the housings, and you probably need new housings. It's been a while, so we're gonna the housings, especially the ones that go up around on a road bike, they go up around your handlebars, and they're actually underneath the handlebar tape. They eventually wear out, and they can, they need to be replaced. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to start all over again, put fresh cable housings on, and put some new cables on. And, it's a pretty inexpensive fix. It's just there's some labor involved because you have to unwrap the bars. And, it takes a little bit. And then, of course, when you go out for your first ride or two, it'll work good at first and then not so because the cables may stretch. So there's a procedure that goes along with it.
Yeah, because when I rode this weekend, it was really sticky in the rear shifter, and it was hard to get it to shift from one to the other.
Right.
And there was a little bit of ghost shifting going on. I'm like, oh my God, should I go on this ride? Because you always told me that ghost shifting means your cable could be about to break.
Well, it could be, yeah. In the case of that cable, it wasn't. It was another story. But anyway, we're gonna replace the housings. That's a highly recommended thing from bicycle shops. They always say, well, if it's been a while and you want to replace those cables and it's winter, why don't we just replace the housings too? At the same time, you put a fresh layer of tape on the handlebars.
Yeah.
So you get the nice, gushy, nice new tape. It feels
okay.
Good. So.
All right.
So it's just kind of a procedure that you go through.
Are we going to do pink this time?
We can do whatever you want that I can get.
Right.
Right.
And
right.
Black is always better because
And black is lovely. And here's why. It just doesn't show the dirt. The pink tape looks great for the first ride. It really does. The white tape looks really, really nice for the first ride.
First half of the first ride.
Yeah, yeah. But should you have something like a flat tire, uh-huh, and you have to take your wheel off and you have to peel the tire off and put a new tire on.
Or you drop your chain.
Or you drop your chain.
Yeah.
Your white tape is no longer white. Your pink tape is no longer pink. It is now soiled. And no matter how hard you try, you can't get the soil out of
the tape.
Could
we do stripe? Could we do like black and celeste?
We could do black. I could stripe it. I used to do that for people years ago at the bike shop. I charged twice as much to do it because it was really not fun.
I'll pay you twice as much.
Oh, yeah. Twice as much of nothing is great.
I'll bring you twice as much chocolate.
Oh boy. Now we're starting to catch my interest here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chocolate's always good.
Uh-huh.
I like chocolate.
Valentine's Day's coming.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. All right. Maybe we'll come up with a new design for your handlebars. I used to do, back in the old days of, and those of you, I'll refer to you as seasoned cyclists, not old timers.
Am I old enough to be seasoned? Well, I've only been at it since I'm 41.
Right. And you weren't at it when there was a popular tape out there. It was a Bonotto tape. It was an Italian tape. It was like a very thin plastic tape. You really had to wear gloves to have Bonotto tape because it wasn't kind to your hands.
Oh.
But it looked really sharp and shiny and didn't matter if you had dirty hands because it just wiped off. And so it had some aspects to it that were really very nice. But anyway, I used to take Bonotto tape and I used to do checkerboard patterns. I used to weave it on the bars. And it was really cool looking. And you can shout out to me if you've ever done that on your bike from back in the day. But it's kind of a fun thing to do, and you can make your bike handlebars look a little different than everybody else's out there. So that I also charged more than twice as much for because it was a very painful process to do that. So the riding checklist is you pick your bike and let your bike fall. That's interesting. Pick your bike up 4 or 5 inches off the ground and then let it drop, investigating any rattling or odd noises when it hits the ground. They could be signs of loose parts. By the way, do this after inflating the tires, please. Otherwise, you're going to damage your rims. You want to test the brakes. You just engage the levers, check and make sure everything snaps back quickly. Make sure your tires are okay. You spin the wheel, you secure the wheel, make sure that the wheels are on tight. Yeah, got to do that. These are simple things. And then it says on the bottom of this list here, it says secure the headset. So the headset's the steering mechanism in the front of your bike where the fork goes through. And if it's loose, you will get that rattly thing. So when you did the number one on this list of let your bike fall, you would hear the rattling. You can also grab onto the front brake lever and you can roll the bike back and forth and with a lot of pressure on it, and you'll be able to feel any looseness in the headset. So you want to check that too. So those are all things that you want to check out because you know what? It's going to be nice soon. I went by the greenhouse,
Ledgebrook,
the garden center this morning, Ledgebrook. And there was a sign out that said only 8 weeks till spring.
Right.
That's very encouraging. Next week it'll say 7. They change it every week.
It's really fun.
It's one of those things that we get around here because yes, we have winter and it's, what is it, 19 out today, something like that. It was cold. It was very cold this morning. I know that. So
we're up over 20 now.
Yeah.
It says 21 here in stores.
Wow, we are just rocking the house.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's roasty toasty. Yeah. Those are degrees, folks. Anyway, not a good time of year for us up here in the cold Northeast.
It's only but 64 at my mom's.
Then again, well, 64 is pleasant.
I would take it.
I would take it, too. It sounds really nice. Mm-hmm. So anyway, you wanna get your bike ready for spring. because I'm going to remind you about this probably weekly at this point because what's going to happen is you're going to go, oh, yeah, I should do that. And then next week you may listen to a podcast or you may listen to the show again and you'll go, oh, yeah, yeah, I got to do that. And then the next week will go by, and, oh, yeah, I got to do that. And before you know it, it'll be spring. And if you're one of those who does your own work on your bike, well, a tip of the cycling cap to you. But if you're one of those who waits and brings it to the bike shop, shame on you. Bring it there now. What are you waiting for? Come, go see the bike shop. They're very friendly right now. They're extremely friendly right now. They're lonely right now. You should stop by and see them. Bring them chocolate. They like chocolate. That's always good.
Is there a food they don't like?
I find very few bicycle shops and people who work in them have any problems with food. Food is usually not an issue. They like food and they like beverages. And I'll leave the beverages up to you and the query at your local bike shop to ask them which beverages they prefer. But food and beverages are always good. It's a nice way to make friends and influence people. So it's a good thing. It's definitely a good thing. So I was poking around and looking at some different things, and I found this great little website called The Grist, GRIST.org. And there's a section here, and it says Bikenomics, how bicycling will save the economy if we let it. So, you know, obviously this is the walk that I walk and the talk that I talk. I really believe in bicycles, and I'm certainly preaching to the choir if you're listening to this, but you can always take this information and carry it on to, you know, a dinner party or to work or wherever it is that you're socializing with different people and talk to them a little bit. So anyway, this is a great little article. It was the first column in a series that was focusing on the economics of bicycling. So imagine getting a $3,000 to $12,000 tax rebate this year. Can you imagine that? That's a sizable amount of money, isn't it? I mean, I could use an extra $3,000 to $12,000, couldn't you?
Tax rebate? Who's getting a rebate?
Now, well, think about this just a second. Now imagine it coming again and again every single year. And you keep getting these over and over and over again.
That'd be nice.
Wouldn't that be nice? Imagine how this would change your daily life. Does it sound like a dream come true? Does it sound like it couldn't possibly happen? It's actually a conservative estimate of how much you'd save by ditching your car.
Wow.
Or just one of your cars. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So get a bicycle instead. Car-centric conditions don't always make it easy to choose a bicycle. Communities are designed exclusively for motor vehicles to impose a major financial penalty on those who are compelled to take on the expense of driving. But if you're one of those who loves and lives on in a bike-friendly place, then you'll be doing your local business community a good turn and padding Uncle Sam's pockets as well as your own if you trade in your four wheels for two. So I had one of my members of my morning spin class this morning, which was, by the way, sold out because it's cold out. Sold out because it's cold out. He is heading off for the weekend to Minneapolis. And he is, I said to him, he's going there because he said, well, there's, our family is meeting there. It's a central place for us all. So we're going to meet there. And he goes, and there's really good food and there's really good beer. And I looked at him and said, Michael, and there's also really, really good bicycle infrastructure there. And he goes, oh, you can't believe how wonderful it is. Because Minneapolis, St. Paul, that's the number one place in the United States right now for bicycle friendly. Hard to believe with it being in the cold belt that we live in, but yeah, they pay more attention to bike trails and such than anybody else in the United States, even more so than Portland. I've mentioned Minneapolis before. I need to go there. I really need to go check out Minneapolis because it sounds like really, really cool. So it's a good thing. So you wanna work on getting your communities into a bicycle-friendly idea. So the good way to do this is to, you know, show up to a few town meetings, represent yourself as a bicycle-friendly person, as a, you know, an ambassador to your sport. And you want to really blow them away? Ride your bike there. Maybe not when it's 19 degrees out, but some people can do that. Our good friend Dave likes to ride in all types of weather. I don't know how you do it, but shout out to Dave. So what does a new bicycle economy look like? If you take a look at places like Minneapolis, you take a look at other bikeway towns that are building up like Baltimore, Portland, you know, they're all very, very oriented towards, you know, Madison, Wisconsin's another one. Consequently, a lot of these also tend to be around university towns. A little shout out here to downtown stores here at the University of Connecticut. So they tend to be around university towns because a lot more people from that genre are riding bicycles. Why is that? Because A, they're young, they're healthy, they're fit. So they're at a prime part of their life where they can physically do the work it takes to ride the bike. B, they're also financially strapped. They have a lot of student bills, so they don't necessarily have a lot of money to be driving a motorized vehicle. So the bicycle tends to work well in a college town because of that, too. Another little shout out, Davis, California comes to mind. Unbelievable. If you've ever been there, you know what I'm talking about. It does tend to happen a little bit more around college towns than others, but it also happens in major city hubs. So if you take a look at state capitals in a lot of states, you'll see a lot more bicycle activity there. If you take a look at just large areas, we have the three largest cities in the state of Connecticut are Hartford, Bridgeport, and New Haven, and Bridgeport being the largest one. And, you know, it's a much better way to get around. Backing up to the college student, this is also it's also a great way to stay healthy and fit too. So it's nice. It's all very nice. So you see it a little bit more in college towns. Pretty obvious place. But what does it do for you? So people who ride, just like people who drive, they buy groceries, they visit the doctor, they need a new shirt sometimes, they enjoy a dinner or a movie, they work, their kids attend school. And despite the media attention given to the mega mileage super commuters, for most people who depend on bikes for transportation, life works best with all these necessities and reasonable biking distance, like 5 miles from their home. So the people that are living in these communities also are choosing these communities to live in because they are bicycle friendly. So if you are living in an area where you would like to see your community grow, but not grow in a way that's going to cause a lot of stress and pollution and crowding to your infrastructure, consider a bicycle friendly option, because the bicycle friendly option is better for all of us. It's better for our environment. It's better for our health and our fitness. And if you take a look at the other thing, is bicycle parking is is part of this new economy with you take a look at a business that is a cafe or something like that, or a small store, a grocery store maybe. They're starting to put bike racks up in front of their stores. Why? Because they want to encourage people to come there. Why is that? Because the parking lot that was designed to only hold so many cars is now getting full. And if it's full, they can't get any more people in there. No more people in there, no more business. They can't add to their business. Put a couple of bike racks out in front, maybe holds a couple of dozen bicycles, and now you've got more customers. So these are also a really, really good thing. If you're in your community, up here in Storrs, I know we have a transportation center. And at that transportation center, you can pick up the bus and you can go to Hartford with it, or you can go all the way around campus and all. But all the buses here have bike racks on them, because they know that people may want to just transport their bike. Well, our friend Tony, came all the way out from Hartford, and he could carry his bicycle on the bus. And then once he got to the transportation center, he could then ride over to the radio station. So these are options that you have, which are kind of nice. But you don't need the car. That's what it really comes down to. As if you open up your mind and you look outside of the box and look at ways of eliminating either one car or all cars, then you're just doing a lot more good for your society and your health and fitness and for everyone in general. The other thing that's really cool, and I have this argument all the time, with people that are driving large vehicles, and they have that discussion about, you're in my way. And, if you weren't on that bicycle, then I could get around you. If you had your own bike path, then you should be on it, or you could be on it. Well, let's fund that. Let's do something like that. Let's open up that framework and talk about getting some infrastructures set up that are designed so that if you have a major city, I'm going to pick Hartford as an example. If you have a major city in the middle of your state, happens to be your state capital, you should have a really pretty much a web of bike paths that come into your city. So think of Hartford as the hub. Think of the towns outside as the outside of the wheel, and then the spokes would be the major arteries that come into the city. Right now, the only major artery in Connecticut going into Hartford is coming from the east, not from the north, not from the south, and not from the west. So these are things that you need to identify. And the cool thing is, if you do that, then you're also going to start encouraging more bicycle activity around town. You're going to have more places that you can safely put your bike safely and securely without being a problem. It grows upon itself very, very quickly. Matter of fact, there's going to be these Lime bikes are coming to Hartford. Did you hear about that, Fran? It's a bike share program.
Yeah, I think I did see some photos of them.
Yeah,
because Anthony Chirolis.
Yeah, well, we're going to see those. Yeah, big shout out to Tony. That's a good thing. This is the type of thing that changes the way people think and the way people are around bicycles. The acceptance of the bicycle grows dramatically. The pollution in your area drops dramatically. The infrastructure, the damage to your infrastructure drops dramatically. We don't weigh 4,000 pounds. We are very light. Most of us lighter than most because we ride our bikes. So anyway, the point is that we don't do the same kind of infrastructure damage to our road systems and network systems as one would do if one was driving a motorized vehicle. So, you know, it lowers families' health costs. It reduces the business's need to invest in costly parking spaces for staff and customers. You know, you can put 10 bikes in a parallel parking space.
Whoa.
10 bicycles in the space of one automobile. How about that? So that's something you need to look at, because there is an answer here and there is a future here. And if you start taking a look at companies like the big ones, the Facebook people, the Google people, all the big computer and information people, they have these large campuses and they're very bike friendly. It's all about being able to get around and get around on a bike. And it makes a lot more sense. So I know we have a love affair here in the United States with cars and trucks, and it just seems to have gone to a much more disgusting route recently, as the cars and trucks have all become trucks and they're just large vehicles. It's what we have. We have a fascination to it. We got to start weaning ourselves off of this. This is like having a health concern. This is something that Dr. Fran can relate to here. Having a health concern and knowing that it has to do with the fact that you're eating the wrong things, or that maybe you're a little larger than you need to be. So therefore, you have health concerns. It's what we need to do is we need to put ourselves on a motorized vehicle diet. So it's time to reduce the number of motor vehicles that are out there. Now, a big tip of the cycling cap. Love tipping my cycling cap, by the way, when I see something positive, to the millennials. The millennials came in and for various reasons, they ended up with great educations, huge student loan bills, and no jobs. So they learned very quickly that affording a motorized vehicle was probably not the option. So they have moved into a lot of the big cities. You see, the Boston, the New York, the Chicago, the Atlanta, all over the U.S., L.A., San Francisco, big bicycle activities there. And it's the millennials that are riding their bikes. They're not buying cars. They're not buying cars so much that the automobile industry is shaking in its shoes right now. The oil industry is not real happy right now. Their numbers are not good either. Why is that? Because we've taken a generation of people and we've taken them away from the automobile. So it's changing things. So you say, maybe this isn't good for the economy. I mean, we've relied on automobiles for spurring our economy, for for decades, and it's like it's a huge thing. Well, other things will happen, and it will switch. It'll make a change. What happened when all of a sudden it became no longer a good thing to smoke cigarettes? Okay, there was a big concern. The tobacco industry went and they testified about how it was going to hurt them. It was going to put them out of business, and they were no longer going to be able to, you know, employ people. And all. It's not true. It's not true at all. They're more lucrative than they've ever been in the past. Unfortunately, it's because they're shipping their products all over the world and not just relying on the U.S. economy for it. But they are they're doing just fine. Businesses make adjustments when they need to. So it's not going to hurt the economy. And the other thing is other businesses emerge when this happens. If all of a sudden you have 25% more people riding bicycles, using their bicycles for everything, and having all this extra money because they no longer have car payments, they no longer have car insurance payments, no more registration payments, no more taxes on the vehicle, and they're saving all this money, what are they going to do with that money? They're going to spend it. They're going to spend it in places like cafes and other stores that are out there. They're going to start feeding that money back into the community, and they're going to become a lot more community oriented too. The friendliness that occurs, the calmness that you get when you go to a bicycle friendly community, everything is just settled down. The violence drops, the crime stop, it drops down dramatically. There's all sorts of statistics out there as to why you should change your economy over to a bicycle-oriented economy. So there's not a lot of economic scenarios in this country where everyone wins. But if you have to choose one thing that could pull your neighborhood or your town or your city out of the murky pit of a recession, yes, I think we're still in the recession, by the way, in certain parts of our country, even though it has been said by those of seeming importance that it is all over and now we are on a wonderful growing time. There are still people that are suffering from it. And so anyway, this is a great way to do it. Turn your community into a bicycle friendly community and set it up so that you have a bicycle economy. It can save the world. So anyway, I have a book at home which I've been reading, and it's it is a Bikenomics book, and it's all about, you know, how a bicycle economy. My friend Matthew Feiner, who was here, gave me that book, and I finally got around to starting to read it, and it gives you a perspective on this and how it all will work. So it's kind of a cool thing. So that's something we need to start paying more attention to. There's a few other things out here I'd like to talk about before we get done. I found a great article that was actually, it was a Velo News article, and I actually posted it a couple of weeks ago on my Facebook page, and it was a technical question: how much rest do older cyclists need?
So, a lot.
How do you really feel about that? So,
can I take a nap now?
No, you can't. So anyway, there's a great
How about later.
There's a great book out, and I think it's something that, gosh, I wish I could had time to read more or would read more. There's a great book out, and it's a book by Dr. John Mandrola. You're sleeping on me. No sleeping on me. Come on, wake up, wake up, wake up. It's by Dr. John Mandrola and Leonard Zinn and Chris Case, and it's called The Haywire Heart. So,
oh no,
you may want to chime in on this one.
Okay,
and it's the first book to examine heart conditions in athletes. It's intended for anyone who.
This is great. I want to read this book.
Yeah, I think you should. I think you should. It's intended for anyone who competes in endurance sports like cycling, triathlon, running races of all distances, and cross-country skiing. The Haywire Heart represents the evidence that you're going too hard or too long, and it can damage your heart forever. What
Wow.
to watch out for, what to do about it, and how to protect your heart so you can enjoy the sports you love for years to come. So it's The Haywire Heart. It looked really interesting to me, and so where did my page go here? So anyway, there is this is something you definitely want to look at and check and see the you know what is it like? So if you're an older cyclist or an older athlete, we
how
can just
old
leave
is
it
an
at
older
that.
Cyclist or athlete?
Well, I'm saying somewhere between 50 and 70 years of age.
So me.
So yeah, yeah. So and it could be even higher than that. I mean, there's a part of this article here in VeloNews. The person states that they are 74 and started running when they were 39. Competed in 10 marathons, including Boston. Been cycling for the last 8 years, racing 5 of those years, with the exception of the senior games, where he has raced for 7 years. So there's, you know, how do you deal with this when you get older? Well, I can tell you the one big one, the one that I'm constantly pushing upon people, because I spend a lot of time training people using, you know, teaching spinning classes, indoor cycling classes. I have a lot of people who come to me and they're interested in racing bicycles. So they go, I need to pick your brain. I want to do this. And so I'll guide them in that direction because I'm an advocate for this. But the thing is rest. Did I mention rest? And then there goes Fran. She's snoring off on me again. So there we go. There's that's lovely, dear. That's really nice. It sounds really nice on the airwaves.
Yeah.
So rest is so important, and it's something that none of us, I think, really have a good idea of how to do.
I like rest.
Yeah, rest is good.
Yeah.
So I'm talking about, you know, there may be a point where you are working out at a fairly aggressive level and you find that you're starting to get a little more tired, a little more tired, a little more tired. And then you just go, I can't do this. And you take a day off. Consider the possibilities. Taking a day off. No physical exercise whatsoever. What do you think of that idea?
Well, I do it every week.
Yeah. When do you do it?
Friday.
You do it on Friday.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't do most anything.
Weeks.
You don't go swimming.
No.
You don't.
Unless
you don't
I
lift.
Don't. Generally, if I don't have, if I have, if my work start time is, 7:30, anywhere from 7 to 8, 9 o'clock, I might go swimming, but often I don't. Mm-hmm. And I probably am going to do something if my start time's 10. But if I'm my usual start time, 7:30, 8 o'clock, I'm not exercising at all on Friday.
So, just to put it into perspective, I'm teaching a lot right now,
yeah.
Sometimes twice a day.
That's right.
So I'm teaching 9 classes a week
right
now.
You can teach off the bike, you know.
And I can teach off the bike, or I can also wear my heart rate monitor, and I can monitor my heart rate and keep it down in zone 2.
Yeah, you could.
And I can do that. The point is you have to be able to do that. Zone 2 or maybe a little bit in zone 3. But I've been doing that for the last couple of days because I'm a little overworked on the bike by doing all these classes. So this morning I got back on the bike, had a very full class. That always inspires me a little bit to get involved in the class, which is a temptation, which is sometimes, you know, you shouldn't do. But I placed the workout in front of them. I participated in the workout this morning, and as I like to do a couple of times a week. Sometimes 3 times a week is all I'll do if I'm doing a really hard workout. And then everything else is easy stuff. What I used to call many years ago as garbage miles. So you're just putting that time in, you're keeping your heart rate super low, and that's what I have been doing. Today I got involved in the workout, and I found that because the bikes that we have record wattage, and you can see where your wattage is at, I found that my wattage levels were way higher than they had been for the same heart rate. So I'm getting more wattage out of it. And so I'm basically, by doing the rest, I found out that my fitness level is actually increasing because I'm able to get more wattage with less heart rate. So that's kind of a cool thing. So why is that? Because of rest. And as you get to be older, This is more of a concern because I didn't have to do this when I was 20 years old.
I like rest.
You know, or maybe I did need to do this when I was 20 years old. I just didn't know any better.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that the harder I went out and rode my bike, the faster I was going to get. And then I would just ride my bike faster and harder than the next day and the next day and the next day. And I never took into effect the consequences of that. But
yeah.
Now we're starting to see all sorts of things. And I talked to a friend recently who just got diagnosed with
atrial fibrillation,
right, which is not good.
No.
And then there's, you know, I mean, people are getting, they're getting pacemakers put in because of problems they're having with the heart. These are really like people that have been exercising their whole life, highly trained athletes. And so it's, this is a thing. A person commented here, after reading the book, I have reduced my workout sessions. So only going for 30 to 40 minutes, maybe weightlift maintenance for an hour and 15, riding the trainer for just an hour a week, and resting one day a week. Before that, the cycling on the trainer was an hour and a half to an hour and 45 minutes, three or four times a week, unless I rode outside at 30 to 50 miles, three or four times a week. Jogging twice a week and weights once a week. So... The quote here is, some of the information in the book scares me, and it is the reason for my question. So the cardiologist, if you find a cardiologist who also happens to be an athlete, that's a bonus. That's a big bonus. Most of them are, I find. I don't know too many cardiologists that are not active.
That is a good question.
You know, I think they get it. Somehow, because they see it every day, they get it.
I don't think all of them are, but... I'm thinking about the ones that I know.
The ones I know are all pretty active. And
yeah.
Then I know that a friend of mine was sent to a specialist in Hartford who is a former marathon runner and definitely stays very fit still and certainly understands the concerns of a person who is a... I don't know what to call this. You know, you would call someone who eats too much an overeater. What would you call
an over-exerciser?
An over-exerciser.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so he's been really good about, you know, explaining, well, you know, maybe you should consider just instead of going for that, you know, 40 or 50 mile bike ride that day, why don't you just go for a walk? You know, you can still get the exercise in. You can still do what you need to do, but limit it to an hour, you know, and just go walk for an hour. Do something different, something load-bearing, something different. These are things that... you have to start questioning because, you know, how much exercise, how much rest do older cyclists really need? A lot. I'm going to say it again, a lot. We need a lot. We feel better. And if you go by this, like I've got people that take my, I'm speaking of an hour and a half class. I have people who take my hour and a half class on Sunday, and it's a hard class, and you can get really, really beat from it. You can really feel it. And they'll when they come in, I have three or four of them that take my Monday morning class very early in the morning, and I walk up to each of them and say, you're going easy today. Try not to get into the workout. I want you to just, you know, keep your heart rate low, stay with it. And since they've been doing that, they've been feeling a lot better. And it's okay. It's okay to go to an indoor cycling class and not do the routine. If you want to be proper etiquette, you can go up to the instructor and say, hey, look, you know, I did a really hard day yesterday. I need an easy day today, so I'm just going to cruise. I'm just going to spin easy. And they'll understand. That's not a problem at all. So the question is, how much rest do you need? Why don't you send me over some information on that? Tell me where you're at, where you were. Let's talk about this a little bit more.
I don't know, but I see a nap in my future today.
Yeah. Well, the big thing was one of my spinning students on my Monday, Wednesday, Friday class came up to me after class one day and said, I'm going to name my nap after you today. Which I liked. I thought that was really funny. That was definitely a funny thing. So the book to check out, and we will look out a little bit further here. Maybe I can get someone to give me some information on this. Maybe I can get a hold of the author here, is The Haywire Heart and How too much exercise can kill you. It sounds really, really intriguing and really interesting. We're running out of time, and I've got a few things I have to talk about here just because we have a bunch of upcoming events. I will say that next week I have Scott Livingston and Art Rohde discussing their recent trip to the Cyclocross Nationals in Reno, and we will also talk about the Cyclocross Worlds, which are right around the corner. So we got the World Championships right around the corner. Are the Belgians going to do it again, or will there be folks from the Netherlands creeping in on them? So it's going to be an exciting time, I think, and that's right around the corner here. Upcoming events. 2018 UCI Cyclocross World Championships for cyclocross season 2017 and 18. They're scheduled to be held in Valkenburg in the Netherlands on Saturday the 3rd and Sunday the 4th of February. Also, we have the North American Hand-Built Show, which we had a guest on last week who talked all about that. That will be in Hartford, Connecticut. It will be on Friday, February 16th, and it starts at 10 in the morning, goes to 6 at night, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So that will be all 3 days, the 16th, 17th, and 18th in Hartford at the Convention Center. Very exciting. The National Bike Summit in Washington, D.C., March 5th through the 7th. You can check that out by going to the League of American Bicyclists at bikeleague.org/summit. And you'll find out more about that. The National Bike Summit is the premier bicycle advocacy event of the year, uniting the voices of bicyclists on Capitol Hill. So the theme this year is Grassroots Grow Together. They're going to be showcasing successes at the local level, learning how they happen, and exploring ways to expand their reach. Peer learning is a critical component of growing and strengthening the bicycling movement. Together, we make our local, regional, and national work a unified force of unstoppable change. And last thing on my list of upcoming events is Bike Walk Connecticut. That would be Bike Walk Connecticut. BikeWalkCT.org is having their summit on Friday, April 6th from 8:30 in the morning till 5 p.m. And it is at the Lyceum, 227 Lawrence Street in Hartford, Connecticut. They encourage you to sign up for that. So we have a lot of good things going on here and coming up as we work our way out of the quiet cold of winter. My name is Pedalin Ron. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. You can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or iTunes. And if you'd like to contribute to or be on the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedalin Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.